girl, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi.
Thank you, Bridget, for asking me to come share. Always an honor and a privilege. Happy birthday to the birthday people. Again, includes Bridget. Bridget, I don't know if I want to be a ballerina or a detective bee. I remember the first time I ever heard you share, and I just went, yeah, I get it. We like her. I'm overwhelmed this morning. Before I got up here, I said to my wife, do we have any Kleenex? And she just kind of looked at me like, one of those days. I can't have any Kleenex. Because since I've been here, this morning, I mean, I got up, I went about my business. Now we drove down here, speaking in another A&A meeting, you know, begrudgingly. And, thank you. A little jumpy this morning. I have no idea what I'm going to say. I never do, which is frightening to me. But this morning, so many things have happened. I mean, drove up and ran into, and Patty was outside greeting. And I was at a meeting last night. Patty was there. And I've known Patty since the beginning. You know, we had a little group where we got together. Harvey was still away. And we were kind of looking after Patty, and we had this gathering of people. And the purpose of this gathering, this is to give you an idea of my social skills when I got here. A friend and I had decided that we didn't know how to talk to people at all. We didn't know how to socialize. We didn't know how to be around other people. I was the first person she'd let in her apartment for years. And we decided we needed some sort of diversionary tactic, so we decided we'd play Trivial Pursuit. So six of us would get together once a week on Saturday nights, and everybody would bring Chinese food, and we would play this game and talk to each other for a couple of hours, and everybody would leave. And it was absolutely exhausting to just be around other people. How are you? I'm fine. How are you? And it's like, okay, we've done everything we know how to do. Now what's going to happen? I mean, and it was so much in the beginning just to be around other people. And then I watched Bridget take a cake. And I thought of the history of that I've known somebody that long. And I had no history with anybody when we got here. None. And when we drove up, they told us to park in the thing. And we parked, and there was a woman picking through food she found in garbage cans outside. And I was struck by something that the late great Norm Alpe said. He said, the difference between me and that person is seconds and inches. And I believe that firmly to this day, that it's seconds and inches. I mean, I've been shown mercy around here as opposed to justice. I mean, if I'd have been shown justice, I'd have been a lot, you know what I mean? I'd have been dead a long time ago or still in a cage somewhere. Instead, I have a life beyond anything I could have ever imagined. To qualify, I drank and used for 16 years on a daily basis, no matter what. I know that we tell people around here, just don't drink or use no matter what, and I kind of feel, it's my opinion, I feel that's an incomplete sentence. If I could not drink or use no matter what, I would not be here today. It's Sunday morning, there's football on, why the hell would I be at an AA meeting? You know, why would I be doing something that lately has been very uncomfortable for me to do? I wouldn't be doing it. I'd be home not drinking or using no matter what. Work a step? I don't think so. Call a sponsor. Take a phone call from a wine and suffering newcomer at 3 a.m. in the morning because they haven't done anything all day to do anything to promote their own sobriety, but they think 3 a.m. is a good time to call me and talk about it. I'm not taking that call. You know, because I'd be home just not drinking or using no matter what. I'm the exact opposite of that. I drink and use no matter what. Given a good reason, I can't stop. I can tell I've made many, many plans, solemn oaths, deals with God, with others, with myself, to stop at 10. And I failed to mention 10 today. Because it just blew right by 10, and then it was midnight, and then it was 1, and then it was 6 a.m., and then what's the point? And, you know, come 2-4 days later in a different city, all of which I've done. I drank because I liked the effect produced by alcohol. That's why I drank. It killed the pain. It took the fear off of me. made it possible for me to be in the world. And over a period of time, it became like breathing to me. At 16 and a half years old, I had somebody tell me that I was an alcoholic, and my response was, what's your point? This is what I do. This is how I get out of the house. This is how I talk to other people. So for 16 years, that's what I did. And because alcoholism is a progressive illness, it progressed. And there was absolutely nothing I could do about that. There's a great speaker in AA who says there's three phases to alcoholism. Phase one is fun. Phase two is fun with problems. Phase three is problems. And I got the problems by the time I was 22 years old. I stopped using when I was 28. When I was done, my drug of choice is what you got. You know, it's all anti-oral medication. If I can get enough of what you got in me, I can kill the pain. So, I mean, I've been, this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, so, you know, I drank a lot of alcohol. I drank a lot of barbiturates. I shot a lot of things. I snorted a lot of things. I mean, if there was a way to get it into your body, that's what I did on a daily basis. I'm a child of the 60s. We weren't focused on alcohol. We were focused on the drugs. Our parents were the alcoholics. We were carving out our own identity here. Right? We weren't going to drink ourselves to death the way they had. We were going to kill ourselves in an entirely new way. That's what our... So we were focused on the drugs, but the fact is that alcohol was my best friend. I thought of myself as a heroin addict, a cocaine addict, a barbiturate addict, a benzodiazepine addict. I thought of myself as all those things. But that stuff would come and go. The only thing that was on the table every single day was alcohol. That was the great equalizer for me. That was, I knew I was going to be okay if there was a bottle there. If, you know, you do so much cocaine, you can't get your mouth open anymore. And it's 7:30 and the party just started, and you completely overshot the mark one more time. Don't worry about it. Put a little alcohol in your system, right? It'll smooth you right out, and you can go right on with the party, no problem. Not enough heroin to get you that just heart and lungs working place? Don't worry about it. Alcohol will take care of the rest. It was my best friend. By the time I got here, the day before my 28th birthday. I was 215 pounds. I was yellow. My hair out like this, a beard like this. I was psychotic, and I don't use that term loosely. I could not distinguish between the true and the false, like the book tells us. I didn't know what was going on. I'd broken 74 bones. I had over 650 stitches in me. The violence in my life had been insane. My family was dead. I had no friends. I had no place to live. I had burned my life to the ground. There was no area of my life I could look at and say, well, things are going pretty good here. Let's focus on this, right? But I didn't have that. I had no anchors. I had no anchors to life. I mean, I think the majority of people have something. You know, they have a family that they kind of keep it together for, or friends, or a career, you know, or some goals or aspirations, a job, something. You know, to just say kind of, you know, rein it in, keep it in check. I didn't have any of those. I was just loose. I remember at one point in my drinking, I went into, yet again, this bootleg sanitarium in Hollywood where they strap you to a gurney and shoot you full of anticonvulsants and just let you rock. No going to the nurse's station and saying, you know, I'm a little uncomfortable. Could I have something? You know, you just kicked. And it was ugly. And 72 hours later, they need to send you home or the morgue, and they didn't really care which way you went. They had their cash. And I reintroduced myself to God, a God that I hated, renounced at the death of my family. And I said, you know what, God, you get me out of this standing alive, and I will never, ever drink again, or drink or use again as long as I live. I can't take the pain. I can't take the physical pain. I can't take the emotional pain, the psychic pain. I mean, I was just losing it. And I meant it with every fiber of my being. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I know this. And if you get me out of this, I'll never, ever do it again. And I meant it like I've never meant anything in my life. And I got up off of that gurney and went after my car, and I went and drank for another couple of years. Just could not stop doing it. The beast had me by the throat. And when I finally had a moment of clarity, my moment of clarity was the spiritual and emotional nature. Years later, my sponsor told me that the bottom for guys like you, Earl, is dead. you had an emotional on the spiritual bottom. And it was true. I mean, that I knew that I was not connected to another human being on the face of the earth. And that was a direct result of me and my alcoholism. I couldn't blame this on the feds. I couldn't blame it on the cops. I couldn't blame it on God. I couldn't blame it on you anymore. This was mine. And if I wasn't going to die, I was going to have to make a change. And I didn't know what that change was supposed to be. After 42 days out of detox on a free bed, a cot in a free program down in Long Beach that doesn't exist anymore, I came out of there sick as a dog, still sick, still kicking. It's 42 days later, not sleeping, not being able to eat, scared to death of life and everything in it. And this guy, Ray W., said, if you don't want to die, you better go to Alcoholics Anonymous because it's the only place a guy like you has. And I just said, okay. Okay. I was beaten into a state of reasonableness by alcoholism. And I ended up in the basement of a church. Harvey and I were talking about it before the meeting. I walked in. Harvey's now the secretary of the Thursday Night Brentwood Beginner's Workshop. And that was the first meeting I walked into. It's not the first meeting I attended. I was crazy. And I went around the building and I walked in the back door. And I was sure there was at least 1,000 people in there. That's what it looked like to me. And it scared me to death. And I just stepped right back out and went home and shook. And then Friday night, the next night, I ended up in the basement of a church on a Friday night. There was only a couple of hundred people in that meeting. In fact, there were about 45. But I mean, I hadn't seen that many people gathered together like this, you know, under healthy circumstances, you know, in years. And I sat in the back with my arms folded, with my best tough guy look on my face, mad dog and everybody in the meeting, scared to death, no tools for living, no idea how to be here. But I had my face on, I had my mask on, you know, so when you walked up, I said, how you doing? It's fine. What, you want to talk to me some more? I don't think you want to talk to me. And I'm not a tough guy or a bad guy. I never have been. I never will be. What I was an extremely frightened human being that knew that he had no tools for living and no way to be in the world. I didn't know how to do anything that was legal or profound or of benefit to anyone else in any way. I didn't know how to do anything. I came in here blank screen. And I sat in the back, and this guy got up and he shared his experience, strength, and hope. And I heard the first part of it, and I knew this guy didn't know a thing about me. He was an ex-boxer, a wino, and a Skid Row bum. And I went, you don't know nothing about me, man. I mean, I was great at recognizing the differences between you and me. That's how my head worked. That was part of my protection. That was how my defense mechanism. If I can find a way to reject you on some level, I don't have to listen to you. And you know what that does? That leaves me stuck with my best thinking. And I got to tell you, my best thinking didn't get me to AA. My best thinking almost kept me from ever getting here at all. That defiant isolation, man, is that loneliness, that incredibly dark place where you can't ask for help and that's all you need. You can't, on some level, you just can't give it up. You can't give it up because you don't know how. I mean, I came in here with my fist clenched so tight when they said, okay, well, you need to let go. Like, you know, okay. How? How do you let go? I have no experience with letting go. I don't have any experience with surrender. I've experienced defeat, but I've never experienced surrender. Willingness? No, I've been motivated. You know, like when you run out. I've been motivated. But I've never been willing. Honesty, open-mindedness, willingness. I mean, my mind was slammed shut so tight, nothing could get in. I was just a real tightly wrapped cocoon in here. And I sat in the back. And this guy that I had denounced, the Skid Row bum, the wino, the ex-boxer. I mean, look, if you were a woman, you don't know about me. And that was my head. You're black, you're gay, you're Hispanic. You don't know about me. It's not a better or a worse thing. It's just you don't come up the way I came up. 5 years older, 5 years younger, you don't know about me. You came up in something else. I was so good at circling the wagons by the time I got here. I said, if you're not Earl, you don't know about me. There's a difference somewhere, and I'll find it. And then I don't have to listen to you. But what alcoholism had done to me was it had destroyed me. And I sat in the back and all my phaser shields were down. You know what I mean? And my mechanism of protecting myself was of no value anymore. I had been stripped of it. And I sat in the back and this guy started talking and I couldn't help but hear him. I mean, I'm trying to get... I wasn't sitting back there thinking, I'm an alcoholic. If I don't want to die, I need a new way to live. Alcoholics Anonymous provides a new way to live, so I'm going to listen, I'm going to gather information, and I'm going to do what they want to say. That would be the thinking of a reasonable man. Mine was, I came in with my old best thinking, the greater aspect of my disease, the obsession of the mind in full effect. And I sat in the back thinking, shut up, don't tell them anything. My mind worked the way it worked. Sit in the back, arms folded, look where all the doors and the windows are, find out who's got the power, who's got the juice in the room, slide up on them, burglarize their conversation, find out what they got in this A&A deal, and then get the hell out of here. And see if it'll keep you alive. It wasn't about joining up. I didn't get it. And if you're new and you don't get it, thinking, trying to decide whether to kill yourself or several other people, beautiful. That's the way we get here. We don't get here getting this. We come here because of that. Common problem. We have the common problem. You can, if you're new and you're looking around, there's people sitting here, you're thinking, these people didn't use like me, man. Think again. Man, these people did not get here looking like this. I saw a lot of these people come in. Trust me. Not a vision for you. There's another speaker on there. Myself included, man. It was nuts. I ran into a woman at a 30-year birthday party for somebody not too long ago, and she hadn't seen me since I was brand new, and she walked up and she said, Earl? I said, yeah, hi, how are you? Right? I remember her. And she looked at me and she just put her hand up real slow and patted my cheek and she said, oh, God, you were so angry when you got here. I don't remember being angry. Because if you've been angry for 15 years, it's compared to what? It's just where you are. How are you? She said, how are you doing? I said, fine. You know, just eyes darting around your head. Fine, this is just where I've been for a long time. I have nothing to compare it to. This is angry? Okay. Got me, man. I wake up like this, I go to sleep like this. I'm just being there. This guy got up and he shared his experience, strength, and hope. And I didn't know that's what he was doing. But he said there were two things that happened that blew my mind. One was, he said, he talked openly and honestly about his feelings as a man. And he did it with this dignity and this respect that was amazing to me. I mean, I'd never heard it done like that before. I mean, and it was, you know what it was? It was unavoidable. There was an unavoidable truth to it. And addicts and alcoholics, man, when it's real, it's real. I mean, you can't avoid it. It just hit me. And then it was like he looked right at me and he said, you know what? I don't care whether you like what I've got to say or not. If you don't like it, go to another meeting. And I loved that. Because it made it clear to me he wasn't selling me something, he was sharing it with me. And that was an amazing thing to me. That if I wanted this, I could have it for free. And I didn't have to jump up and raise my hand and say, I want to be a member of AA, where do I sign? I didn't have to expose myself like that. I could sit back there with this look of disdain on my face, like, yeah, whatever. Right? While it was piercing my heart. And I thought, this is cool, I'm coming back. And I've never left. I got here destroyed. There was nothing left to do, nothing left to prove. There was nothing. It was the last house on the block. I had to find a way to make AA work or I was a dead man. And I haven't left. I've been, last November 6th, I celebrated 23 years of sobriety. And I couldn't stay sober for a day. I couldn't stay sober for a day. If I was on my feet, it was on. I couldn't do it any other way. So that's how I got here. And that was my first AA meeting. I love getting over the drunk a lot, man. You know, what? Oh. My wife's like, tell that part. Well, as you can tell, things have improved. I mean, I have a wife. Right? Bridget's clapping. She knows. Right? I got a wife. And I often say, you know, as long as her denial holds, we're going to be cool. But I mean, I'm married to somebody that I love. Openly, happily. I'm married to somebody that I like. I like her. I've been married to people before. Never to anybody I knew. Never to anybody that I particularly like. I mean, I mean that when you're shut down, you're shut down. To stand to stand up and marry someone, thinking to yourself, you know, whatever. I mean, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You know what I mean? It's paperwork. Right? So emotionally shut down, you can't connect, right? When we got married, I was completely and totally present for the event. I enjoyed my own wedding. I'm looking around the room, I got all these people in this room that I love, and that I know love me, and I'm all right with it. I don't have to run and hide from the fact that somebody loves me. Because when I was out there drinking and using, if you loved me, I felt so bad for you. I did, because you were going down. There was a chink in your armor, and I was going to control and manipulate things and use this to my advantage, because it's never about you. I'm self-centered and afraid, and I could give you the job of making me happy. And that's a job no one else can do for another human being. And I would give lots of people that job, and when they wouldn't do it, kill them and move on. Explain to them that, you know, they don't measure up. Shame them. Belittle them. Move on. Wreckage, 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 wreckage. Inability to connect with other human beings. Now I got a wife. I got friends. I got people with history here, and I look at them and I smile. And I think, oh my God. Right? I look at Carol and you know, we could be here till dark just talking about shared experiences that Carol and I have and the people that have been in our lives that have had a major positive impact on us as alcoholics. Just amazing stuff. I have a home group. I have a home. I have a house with a wife and two dogs and lots of people flying in and out of the house. Right? All the time. All the time. Phone ringing all the time. Life. Connectedness. Value, purpose, had none of it when I got here. And this is what Alcoholics Anonymous gave to me. This goes past so far past not drinking and using, it's unbelievable. What I found out was is that, you know that circle with a triangle? It's an ancient spiritual symbol. It stands for mind, body, and spirit brought together as a whole human being. And therein lies the balance that I'd never had drunk or sober, ever in my life. When I was a drunken maniac, and when I got sober, I was a sober maniac. Because the greater aspect of my disease, the obsessive nature of my mind, was in full effect. I mean, people in here, there's people in here, are there anybody in here who's in a treatment center? Yeah, a bunch of you guys. Welcome. Welcome. Treatment center's triage. That's where you stop the bleeding. You go into treatment thinking, 30 days, I'm good. Right? Think again. Right? I mean, it's a rite of passage. It's a rite of passage. If kicking, if not having any alcohol or drugs in my body, was the solution for somebody like me, I mean, detox centers would be kicking out winners. 72 hours and free. And self-knowledge would avail me something. People say, and they said it to me, man. I'd come up off that gurney in that bootleg sanitarium, and they'd say, no, you know you're an alcoholic, don't you? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, drug addict? Oh, yeah, yeah. Now, you know for you to drink or use is just to set your life on fire, don't you? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So armed with this self-knowledge, you be a good boy and you don't drink or use anymore, no matter what, all right? Oh, no, I'm not going to. And I'd be loading the parking lot on my way out because I'd kick the physical phenomenon of craving I'd be relieved of, but the obsessive nature of my mind would be in full effect, and that beast would start whispering to me on the way to the car. How you doing? Cunning, baffling, and powerful, man. I used to think I'd be sweeping up at Ohio Street because they say there's no defense against no human defense against the first drink. And I think, oh, Christ, when's that going to happen? Right? Be sweeping up, got a commitment, sponsor standing over there, sweeping up an AA, and all of a sudden my head would just go, drink! And I just drop them off and run and think, oh, here we go. And it's over, and it ain't like that. It's cunning, baffling, and powerful, man. It's smooth up. Right? Just, how you doing, Earl? I know, man. You seem very, very stressed out. You seem to be going through a hard time, man. It's very, you know, and I hate to see you like this because I love you, girl. I love you. I'm here for you. I've always been here for you. I've always been here for you. You know, and I think the stress that you're feeling, the stress that you're feeling, man, you know, this is a health issue. It's a health issue. And I think it's appropriate that we address this. And, you know, and you and I can do that. We can do that. Look, we're just going to go out and have a couple of cocktails. Don't overreact. Don't overreact. We're just going to have a couple. Unwind that emotional spring inside you. And we're going to work this through. I'm here for you. I love you. We're going to get our way through this. And listen, I just think, listen, let's just keep this between you and me. You know, I mean, you know, you had that feeling where it's just like, what is this rolling through my head, man? I mean, I'm sitting in detox. Because my life is on fire. And I got a head telling me, a couple ain't gonna hurt. And the fact, and I look at my wife and I go, you know, that's interesting, beast. I've been using for 16 years on a daily basis, and I've never had a couple in my life. A couple won't do what I'm here to do. Kill the fear killer, man. He won't do it. Only reason to have a couple of drinks is while you're waiting for him to bring you another couple of drinks. Once you got six or eight drinks in you, you're in the car and you're on your way downtown. Here we go. The madness is on me, man. And the beast voice changes too, doesn't it? It's nice and sweet. You know, this is reasonable. Right? It uses the words that'll just get me to have that one. Once I throw that stuff in my body, I reactivate the physical phenomenon of craving, and I'm up for grabs. Beast driving the car now. Beast says, thank you. Now! Get a piece of paper and a pencil and write this stuff down, because we got some things we got to get done now. And you can pretty this up any way you want to, or you can rationalize this any way you want. You tie a bow on it. You can decide, should I use, should I not use? You work it off. Just do whatever you got to do, but we will be using it. We will be. After 16 years, I'm thinking, I've been deciding, and I look back and I go, you know what's interesting? Never chose not using. Never chose that. I always chose this one. That's the nature of the disease that I deal with in a session of mind and the analogy of the body. Unity. Hey, adopted that spiritual symbol in mind, body, and spirit, and it's unity, service, and recovery. It's the same thing. Unity's the body. I bring it here. I couldn't get sober, but we seem to be able to together. I need to look at you. I can lie to them, man, and they buy it all day long. How you doing? I'm fine. Oh, good, good, good to see you. I come in here, right, with a storm in my brain. I walk in and I see anybody that knows me at all. I walk in and they say, how you doing? I say, fine. And they say, hey, really? Good. All right, come on, let's talk. I can't lie to you. You know me. You know where I come from. You know about the darkness. You know about the hopelessness. You know about the madness. And you know the things that lie dormant within me. You know about them. Can't lie. So the unity is the body. I bring it here. I go to regular meetings and regular meeting nights because that's how I don't remain anonymous in AA. I go to a different meeting every night for 3 years. And then when I go drink, nobody's going to say, well, where's Earl? Because nobody knows my name. Because I'm not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not in the fellowship at all. I got to come in and I got to hook up. And that's what I did. And then they said, get a sponsor. I said, what's a sponsor? And they said, a sponsor is somebody who's got what you want. Did you hear, have you heard that one? Right? Well, and I said, well, I'd like to drink. So maybe it's a little early to be throwing the ball back in my court. You know what I mean? I have since come to believe that I want a sponsor who's got what he wants. That's a pretty good definition of happiness, wanting what you've got. Wanting what you've got. So I find a sponsor who's got the light in his eyes, got a passion for living, who seems to no longer be, it's not about getting to bed not drinking. It's not about getting to bed not using. It's not about, okay, I'm not drinking and using today. It's about being something else. It's about being relieved of the obsessive nature of the mind, being free of the beast, being able to walk the earth a free man for the first time since I was 12 years old. That's what I'm looking for, and that's the guy I want. And that guy then takes me through the process. Unity's the body, I bring it here. Recovery's of the mind, I got to address the beast. I can't walk around with that in my head, that option floating right there like my breath. Just waiting for me. The planets to line up a certain way, and life on life's terms is going to happen, and I'm going to find out I'm not in charge of that. And when it hits the fan, and I find out I'm not in charge of the fan, I'm going to look at my options, and I'm going to be in a dark place, because it's life on life's terms. I'm going to look at that, and I'm going to say, let's see, what options have I got available to me? I can't see drinking and using there. I can't see that. Because if I see that, I'm going to consider it, and the day's going to come. I have to be relieved of that. How do I get relieved of that? Work the 12 steps. That's what they're for. Step one, what's the problem? Lack of power. That's my dilemma. If lack of power is my problem, what's my solution? A power greater than myself that can restore me to sanity, soundness of mind, relieve me of the obsession to drink and use. Why I'm here. Cool. I know my problem in step one. I know my solution in step two. Step three says you better make a decision to do something about this. Action brings about change, and that's what we need here. I need to change. Action will bring that about for me. Contrary action will bring that about for me. So I feel this way, and I move this way. Very difficult thing for somebody who's been ruled by his feelings his whole life. I pretty much disregard the facts. They're irrelevant. It's how I'm feeling. I never got loaded over the facts. I get loaded over how I'm feeling. I medicate myself to be rid of these feelings. I got to find new ways to do that, to address how I feel. Because it is life on life's terms. I'm going to feel good one day and it's great. My job there is to enjoy it. If it's a bad day, my day is to move through this with some dignity and some honor and some respect for self and others and get to the end of the day without having created a whole bunch of wreckage. When I'm using, if I'm awake, wreckage. It just happens. because I'm fearful and I'm driven by self. Ugh. You should see the inside of my head right now. God. It's a journey. It's a process, too. I'm a flawed man. We all are, you know? We all are. I'm a flawed man. But I'm getting better and better day by day by day as a result of chopping the wood and carrying the water of AA. That's what it's about taking the contrary action, going in the opposite direction of how I feel. That's a completely foreign idea to me. And it took fellowship and it took sponsorship to lead me in a direction that I would never consider. So step one, problem. Step two, solution. Step three, make a decision. Get on my knees and turn my will and my life over to the care of a God I may or may not understand. I certainly did not understand. I got here fully professing that I did not believe in God, and I would gladly engage you in conversation about that. Then my first sponsor, the late great Donald Madden, who absolutely enjoyed moments like this when he just saw me coming, you know what I mean? And he just pick up the 2x4 that he was going to hit me right between the eyes with. And he would smile and he would say, Earl, you can't be mad at a God you don't believe in. Yeah, that was my reaction. Just, huh. So, you know, if I had any idea what you meant, I'd probably be pretty mad at you right now. I'm just going to go away. And I realized I had a relationship with a power greater than myself. It was just a bad one, and that was on me. Yeah. And so having made that decision in step three, I embark upon a plan of action. 4 and 5 is me, 6 and 7 is God, 8 and 9 is you, and there's nobody else to play with. That's it. And I embark upon that. 4 and 5, I swallow large chunks of truth about myself and admitted these things before God to another human being. 6 and 7, I ask God to remove my defects of character because I'll remove the wrong stuff. Give it to God. Give it away. Surrender it. Allow the process to begin. 8 and 9, hook it back up with you. Very, very sorry. Here's your money back in the house. Nice and simple. 10, 11, and 12, keep me in the game. 10, me, 11, God, 12, you. Same thing. Allow me to continue to go deeper and deeper and deeper into the process of the relationships that these three circumstances are based on. A relationship with self, a relationship with God, and a relationship with others. And try to get this on some healthy level, even ground. Having had a spiritual awakening is the result of working these steps, having been restored to sanity, soundness of mind, relieved of the beast, man. No longer an option for me. It's not that I choose not to drink on a daily basis. It's not even an option. It doesn't come up for me. Not only am I not obsessed with drinking and using, it doesn't even occur to me. Every once in a while, I'll drive by and I'll see a billboard and I'll think, I never had that. It looks so refreshing. All I got to do is just, you know, find newcomers. Did you have the Zima? The Zima, didn't it look good? Right? Harvey didn't get any Zima. I didn't get any Zima. Right? I go, how's the Zima? He goes, stuff sucks. Thank you. The Zima. Right? I mean, it's just new face, new twist, new spin. You know what I mean? Saying it's alcohol. Alcohol. Kill me. That's what Zima will do. Kill me. It's not refreshing. I got to rethink it. Right? Still. But it's not excessive. It's just kind of funny when the thought rolls by and you go, isn't that amazing? Apparently, a shred of alcoholism remains. Probably should go to a meeting. You know, so I go to meetings. And so those are the steps. I did all that stuff. I did what they said. I got a big book. Astonishing event for an alcoholic, I think, to get a big book. Remarkable event. Read it. Text of alcohol. Read it. That's the program. This is the fellowship. That's the program. If I don't get a program, I'm going to die. That's me. I'm one of the lucky ones. It's clear cut for me. I'm not one of the ones that wonders if I belong here. I accepted my alcoholism 12 years before I got here. Stephen, are you alcoholic? Yeah. Yeah. Guys, any ideas what we can do about that? That's why I'm here. That was easy. What I didn't know is how far this goes beyond drinking and using. This is a design for living. Things happen in here that you cannot imagine. There's no way. If you're drinking and using out there and you come in here destroyed, you have no experience with what is yet to come. And I'm telling you, the buzz in here is so much bigger than you can imagine. I mean, now, I'm 23 years sober. I'm 51 years old. When I turn, every birthday I go, 51. I go, how amazing is that? I'm 51. Is that like middle age or something? I'm a middle-aged man. Suddenly, I'm digging it. My life's better than it's ever been. The trade-offs are exceptional. I'm comfortable, more comfortable being a role than I've ever been. You know, right, lately I've been going through a lot of stuff. Some things have been hard for me. I've hated speaking. I've hated it. I don't want to do it. Canceled out most of it. I go to my meetings. I want to sit and listen. I got a legion of guys I sponsor. I want to work with them. I want to be in the trenches, and that's because that's what's best for me. That's what I want to do. But I've learned that. I mean, look. Now I go to meetings, and I can see it for what it is. Sanctuary for somebody like me. Acceptance, like Bridget talked about. Love, right? Purpose, value, possibility. And the one thing that I came here and I needed more than anything else that I didn't have, there's hope here. There's hope here. You come in with the beast in your head, kicked, physically sober, the beast is still alive. And things are coming through your head that you can't believe. I mean, making anything else a priority. The job's a priority. The kids are a priority. The wife or the spouse is a priority. The job is a priority. AA has to come first because it's the thing that sustains me. And then I bring a more balanced, more available me to the job, the wife, the kids, the career, whatever it may be. So if Alcoholics Anonymous is number one, if recovery is number one for me, right, that's going to have a positive impact on everything I do. If I drink because I didn't keep it number one, that's going to have a negative effect on absolutely everything I do. It just fits at the top. That's where it fits. I remember being new and going to Ohio Street. Look, I sponsor a guy named Louie. I sponsor Satan. Louie's the guy with the shaved head with the two red horns of hair that go up like that, with the beard that goes down like this, and the devil's tail tattooed up his back, and the flames tattooed up his legs so he's standing in the fires of hell. Right? I'm speaking in a meeting one day, and this guy comes walking up to me and says, "Dude, you have to sponsor me." Which I found frightening. Because it's like, bro, what am I? I got on the suit and tie, I got the mask on, you got no idea who's behind here, I got the whole rig on, right? And you come up and throw that at me? What am I throwing out there that's attracting Satan? I don't understand. You know? And Louis's got 11 years now. And is an amazing human being, kind, gentle, loving, amazing human being that is of service to anyone who asks him. He's a fine example of AA. And when he goes to the Midnight Madness meetings and the little speed freaks come tweaking in off the boulevard, right? I mean, 16, 17, 18 years old, and I mean, they're here just in time, right? Permanent damage is taking place. They're getting here just in time. They go flying into me, look around, they go, "Holy shit, the devil got sober." And they run over to Louie, right? And Louie puts his arm around him and says, "It's all right, little bro. You don't have to drink yours one day at a time anymore if you don't want to, and I can show you how." And they go, "Cool." Had no idea. I had a whole different picture of AA when I saw you, right? I kick him. I remember Louie brand new. We'd go to meetings, right? And Louie's sitting there, and I'd be sitting there, and Al Ass is speaking, and he's throwing down the pearls of wisdom, and everything's going great. We're loving it. We're digging it, right? And I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, this is amazing. I get to be a link in the human chain that's bringing all these pearls of wisdom to Louie, and this is just wonderful. The truth is, me and Louie are having completely different meetings. Right? I've worked for 13 years, right, to get to this understanding of what the hell Al's talking about. Louie's been here for 90 days, right? Louie doesn't know what the hell's going on. Louie's hanging on for his life. He's like looking at me and going, "That must have meant something, because he seems impressed. I have no idea what happened." And I gotta, you know what? And I gotta remember, Louie gets his turn. The new guy gets his turn to be here and not knowing what's going on, to be here and wrestle with it, to be here and not understand, to need help and not be able to ask for it. I got to keep my eyes open for those folks because I was one of those guys. I remember going to Ohio Street when I was brand new sober. I mean, brand new, and I'm going to Ohio Street, and I'm amazed I even found it again. And I'm driving because it's so loud and crazy in my head. I'm driving going, "There it is, there it is, there it is. Good, 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 good. Park, 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 park." Going, "Put the keys on the seat." They put the keys on the seat, put the key on the seat, put the key on the seat. Put the key. Where should I put it? I'll sit next to the guy with the red coat. Sit next to the guy with the red coat. Find the guy with the red coat. Find your seat. You're good, you're good, you're good. Good. Put the keys on. "How you doing?" "I'm fine. How you doing?" "Fine. How you doing?" "Fine." We're starting the meeting. Good, good, good. Sit down. Reading the fourth chapter five. Rarely saw something. I didn't get a lot of that, but rarely saw something. I gotta remember that. They rarely saw something. Something's rare around here. You're reading this
step, reading step, cross step, rarely 12 steps, ABC. 12 steps, ABC. I didn't get a lot of that. He's gone. He's down. But that was, I got some of that. 12 things, ABC. Another guy, he's up. He drank. I drank like that. That guy's great. I like that guy. He's down. Wait, get that guy. I like that guy. No, he's down. He's up. Here's another guy. He's talking. There's something going on. I don't know what's going on. They're passing a basket.
Don't take the money. What's going on? We're up. We're going outside. I smoke. We're going. I'm fine. They're ringing the bell. I gotta get back inside. Gotta find my seat. Where's the guy with the red coat? Red coat. Where's the guy with the red coat? How you doing?
Back off, pal. I'm fine. All right.
They're reading 12 things. Those aren't the same 12 things. They're 24 things, ABC. And he's down. He's up. He's another guy. He drank. I felt like that. I love this guy. I felt like that. This guy knows how I felt. This guy, he drank like me, yeah, but he knows how I felt. This is amazing. I love that guy. He's down. We're up. They're up. They got me. We're praying. I know this prayer. And I would try and cry all the way home. It pays. Remember, 24 things, ABC. I gotta get one of those books. I don't know what's going on. And that was a successful meeting for me. Because I sat on my ass and I sat there and I tried to get what was going on. It bounced off my head. I was crazy, but I was there. I was committing. I was taking action in defense of my own life. And when I sit there with Louie with 90 days, and we get up and we walk out of a meeting, and I say, Louie, what'd you think of the meeting? And Louie looks at me and says, it's great. I can smile. I know. Louie had one of those meetings, man. But you know what? Louie didn't get up and run screaming out into the night. Louie sat on his ass, held onto his chair, and stayed. Victory. Don't underestimate the little victories. Don't underestimate the wanting to get drunk and not doing it. Not calling the connection, calling the sponsor. Huge victory. There's going to be a day in your life when you're going to be 23 years sober, and somebody's going to say, how did it happen for you, Earl? And you'll be able to go back into the beginning, and you'll be able to say, your sponsor said, instead of getting loaded, why don't you meet me in a meeting? And somebody stepped out of their lives, and it was of service to you like so many had been to them. And then you said, okay. And 23 years got built on that, that decision, that little victory that seems so small and so inconsequential, and it's not. It's seconds and inches, man, between me and that lady outside. Seconds and inches. And those inches are that, not calling those seven numbers and calling the seven numbers. There it is. It's those little things. So try, you know, if you're new, God bless you, man. You know, if you didn't understand a thing I said, that's fine. But you got to accept the fact that I'm an alcoholic, I'm a drug addict, and I don't suffer from the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction. I'm walking the earth a free man. I'm loving and being loved, something I swore on a mountain in Mexico I would never do again as long as I live. Too painful. They were all laying there dying in front of me, and I just said, I can't live life. I can't do it. And I'm doing it. I had a therapist 6 months before I got sober tell me that I was damaged beyond repair and they couldn't help me. And you know what? She was right. She couldn't. But you could. I'm alive because of you. I'm happy because of you. I feel like I have a sense of purpose and value because of the men and women I have met in Alcoholics Anonymous. The only ones that could understand where I had been and what it was I would have to heal from. The torment and the madness of that life. So I'm speaker boy this morning, but you know what? What I am above and beyond anything else is a terribly grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because without you, I have no purpose. I have no value. This is the thing that I stand upon. Right? So thank you for that. I appreciate it very much.